Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and the land between the lakes, between Kentucky and Tennessee. This is the LBL podcast. I'm Dr. John Stamey. So glad to have everybody with us. We've got an exciting topic tonight, something that really rings true and rings home with everybody up there in that area. So first of all, our guests and hosts from I don't know where he's from, but he's from up near there, up near Dickson County, the one and only Elijah Henderson. How you doing tonight?
My friend, I'm doing well tonight. It's a little bit hot out here right now. I'm sitting in a parking lot outside a paint studio. My sister wanted to do a painting class while I was doing the show, so if y'all hear any disturbance or any feedback, it's probably cars along the road. So that's where I'm at.
That's okay. And let me ask you a question. You know, it's funny. Now, I know where Justin's from, but what town do you associate with Elijah?
Well, I'm currently based at Clarksville, Tennessee, and if people don't know that, they might be more familiar with the Army base Fort Campbell, which is pretty well here.
Gotcha. Okay. That I'm sorry, I forgot. It's easy to forget when I'm trying to do so much research and get so many things going. Anyway, it's great to have you here. And our other, because we've got three co-hosts. We've got me, we've got Elijah, and we've got Justin Spurlock from Burns, Tennessee in Dickson County. Did I get that right, Justin?
Absolutely. Yes, sir. That's correct.
We're glad to have you here. And now, you've got great news. Your son was involved in some athletics, and just tell everybody about that, because I think that is such a neat thing for a family to be involved in.
Well, the boys here from Dickson County, Little League Baseball, have had quite a run recently in the, Dixie Youth Baseball Tournament. The boys from our area, 10, 11-year-olds, were able to win enough games that they qualified for the state tournament, and then they went out to West Tennessee and competed in that for several days, and they ended up coming third in the state. So we're very proud of those young boys, and there's also been a couple of girls' teams and I think another boys' team and another age group that have also been pretty successful. So we're definitely proud of any of our athletes here from Dickson County that go on and succeed in anything that they do. We always try to support them. And so it was nice to see them have such success and really have a lot of fun. It was really a lot of fun to watch.
Well, that's great. We're very pleased for your son. Now, what's your son's first name?
Braxton.
Bryson?
All right, Braxton.
Braxton. Okay, we'll tell him we send him the best, and we're glad they did very well. So anyway, tonight we've got a major topic from Dickson County, from the history of Dickson County, and from the paranormal look at Dickson County. It is the one and only Werewolf Springs. So since you are located very close to that, Justin, why don't you get us started and tell us the baseline story that we all need to know about Werewolf Springs?
Well, I'd love to, Dr. John. I appreciate you having me on the show tonight. Werewolf Springs is a place within Montgomery Bell State Park. I guess we should go ahead and start there. Now, this story goes back in time before the Montgomery Bell State Park was created. But now, the place where this incident occurred is now located within the boundaries of Montgomery Bell State Park. And for those who are listening who are maybe not familiar with Dickson County, Tennessee, I'll just kind of give you a little bit of background here. We're just outside of Nashville. So most people know Nashville, Tennessee, a pretty popular city these days. We are to the west. I think Burns on the railroad is 37 miles, almost exactly, to the west of Nashville. And there was a state park that was built in this area back in the 1930s and 1940s. And today, this state park has millions of visitors every year. It's one of the two or three state parks in Tennessee that has a hotel within. So after we get done with this story today, people will have the opportunity, if they want, to go check this out. There is a hotel, and it's a very, very nice hotel, I might add, that people can go and stay at. They can explore this area. But Werewolf Springs is actually Hall Spring. And Hall Spring is a freshwater spring that just spouts up out of the ground and creates a little creek right here in Burns. And it was a spring and a creek that had been used by people here for many generations. Back in the late 1700s is really when people started to kind of get to this area from the East Coast. People would travel over the Appalachian Mountains and come on over into what would become Tennessee, and people started settling. 1796, Tennessee becomes a state. 1803 is when Dixon becomes a county. But really, the events that I'm going to talk to you tonight about happened just after the Civil War. So Dixon County wasn't very populated prior to the Civil War. It was still, you know, very rural. You know, there were people with farms. There were not a whole lot of towns or populated cities before the Civil War. But during the Civil War, they built the railroad out of Nashville going west, and it goes through Dixon County. And so after the Civil War is over, that's when we really start to see a lot of growth in this area. You start to see towns pop up along the railroad, White Bluff, which we, you know, those folks who, you know, are familiar with the podcast may remember that we talked about the White Bluff Screamer. It was just up the road from Burns. A place called Burns Station was created. And then what would eventually be the town of Dixon, which is the most populated city within Dixon County, also formed right there on the railroad. And it was right after the Civil War that the railroad became very popular. You got to think back to the late 1800s, right? There's not cars. We don't have the automobile yet. Airplanes, something that can exist. So your primary source of transportation in the late 1800s was the railroad. And so there were a lot of people, a lot of things that traveled through Dixon County, leaving Nashville, which, of course, is the state capital of Tennessee, very popular place, right? So a lot of people, a lot of things are going to travel through Nashville, and then by default, they're going to travel through Dixon County when they're going west. And it was right after the Civil War that there was an incident that took place that really kind of all of the legends that we have here in our town, it all kind of goes back to this incident, which took place right after the Civil War on the railroad. And there was supposedly, from everything I've ever heard, as far as what I've been told, there was a railroad car or a series of cars that was carrying a circus. And it was coming from Nashville, and it was headed somewhere west, probably towards the Mississippi River, and then who knows where they would go from there. But they were traveling that way, and there was an accident. They're right at Burns. So right on the railroad, which is mile marker 36 to the west of Nashville, there was a crash of some sort, and the train was derailed, and it was the train that was derailed, the train that had to crash, the train that was carrying this circus. And now, if anybody's ever done any research on circuses from the late 1800s and the early 1900s, they were pretty spectacular. I mean, they were pretty interesting events. I've had the chance to do a little bit of research on this just because of the local legends that I was told. I wanted to learn more, so I'd go and I'd do my research and kind of try to figure out, you know, what I could about these old circuses. But if you go back and you look up that information, you'll come to find out that there were all kinds of different attractions. A lot of different animals were part of the show. Unique animals that maybe weren't from North America, that they would go out and they would get from different places, maybe, you know, Africa, Australia, you know, different places. They would import certain types of creatures that maybe we don't even have still around today, but back in the late 1800s, they were able to be found. They were able to be, I guess you would say, captured and kind of used in a way to be part of the circus. And so that's the situation that you've got. You've got this circus traveling on the train, you know, leaving Nashville, going into Dixon County. There's this big crash. You've got all these different creatures, all these different attractions. And you know, when the crash happens, everybody and everything is sort of scattered about. And I think the people who ran the circus probably did the best that they could to sort of recover, recoup, you know, their animals, their attractions, the different performers and things like that. You know, some, you know, may have been hurt, may have died. Others may have just been lost. But most were recovered, is my understanding. And, you know, they were put on another train, and they continued on their journey. But it's always been my understanding that there were some creatures that escaped. And like I said before, don't really know the origin of the creatures. If you go back and do the research on those circuses, they would get them from everywhere. You know, so very exotic animals from different places that we don't know about. You know, we're very most likely and pretty much definitely part of that circus. And so it's always been told to me that some of those animals were able to escape and get away and sort of venture into the valleys and the hollers of Dixon County and sort of stay there. And, you know, over time, there were some different incidents, and people would kind of look back to this train crash and say that's kind of maybe the origin of where this all happened. So let me go ahead and tell you now the actual legend of Werewolf Springs, now that I've given you enough background where everybody kind of understands what's going on here. So when I was growing up in Burns, and I'm, you know, late 30s, we're talking, you know, back in the 80s and the 90s is when I'm hearing these different stories from my friends that I'm growing up around here in Burns. People would always talk about Werewolf Springs from time to time. And, you know, anytime we'd go over to Montgomery Bell State Park, which was, still to this day is a great park that has, you know, lakes and hiking trails. And, you know, we'd go over there to the park and just, you know, enjoy ourselves as young people, just doing the things that young people do. Somebody would always, though, you know, try to scare somebody in the group who maybe wasn't from Dixon County or maybe was new to the area, who didn't really know the story. They would, you know, try to maybe scare them by telling them this old legend. And so it's something that had been passed down from generation to generation, something that I heard myself as a young child. I mean, this is not something that somebody told me. I mean, I heard it from, you know, older gentlemen, friends, and I heard it so many different times that, you know, it just sort of became part of, like, my childhood and my upbringing. But the legend of Werewolf Springs is Montgomery Bell's, you know, scary story. And it starts, you know, like I said, at the end of the Civil War after this crash. In the years immediately following the crash, people started to hear and see some strange things, including, as we mentioned before, in White Bluff. But there in Burns near Hall Springs, there was some different unique things that sort of happened that, you know, people began to talk about. And so the two of the creatures, okay, that were on that train that were part of the circus were known as the Wolfmen of Borneo. And now I'm going to tell you what I've heard about them and sort of what I've been able to find, but the Wolfmen of Borneo were, and you can look this up. You'll be able to find some different information about it. But they were an attraction that would go around to the circus. And, you know, there's different debates and different information about where they were actually from. But like I said before, it was, you know, from another country. And they were some of the creatures that they were never able to really locate. And so when people get, you know, when that train crash happens and some of the different performers are lost, it's believed that the Wolfmen of Borneo were some of the creatures that were able to get away and that were never actually recovered. And so a few years after this supposed crash, very close to what is now the town of Burns, near Hall Spring, there were two men who were traveling through Burns on their way to Nashville. And they decided when they got to the town of Burns that they wanted to try to stop and get some water. And everybody kind of knows that, you know, in the old days right around Burns, the best place to stop and get some fresh water was the old Hall Spring. And for those people that are listening that are from Dixon County, there's the Hall family is a family that's still around today. I know some Halls myself, and they're good friends. And if you go back on their lineage, it would have been their ancestors who would have first settled in this area and who would have used the spring to, you know, help survive and people were, you know, allowed to come and drink from the spring, and so travelers would come through, and, you know, they'd be thirsty, and somebody would tell them, you know, head over there to Hall Spring and get you a drink. So that's what they were going to do. They were going to stop by the spring, get a little bit of water, refresh themselves, and head on into Nashville, which, like I said, is about 35, 36, 37 miles just outside the capital city. So now as they're traveling through, they stop at Hall Spring, they get a little bit of water, and they go to resume their journey. And that's where things got a little weird. As they're leaving Hall Spring, heading towards Nashville, trying to get back on the main road, they feel like they're being followed. And it appeared as if something or someone was in the woods, sort of kind of following them, and then it began to sort of chase after them as the faster that they got. And the men, you know, become a little freaked out. They're not sure what's going on. They call out, you know, thinking if it's a person, surely they'll show themselves. But when nobody comes out, they assume that it's maybe some type of creature, and it may be something that they need to, you know, be aware of and be cautious of. And so they start to walk a little faster, and then eventually they start to run. Well, they began to run so fast that I guess they couldn't hold on to the things that they were carrying. So they sort of ditched their stuff, and including their wagon and the other things that they were carrying. And they start running as fast as they possibly can. Something is chasing after them, and they realize that if they don't get away from it, something bad could very well happen to them. And so what has been described to me as a Sasquatch-like monster attacked and killed one of the men, while the second man was able to escape. So these two guys stop over at Hall Springs, get a little drink, start heading back down the road. They feel like something's coming after them. They hear something in the woods. It starts to chase them. The two men run. This creature is able to attack and kill one of the men, but the other one's able to get away. And the man that got away ran back to the town of Ferns, where they had previously been. And when he gets there, he hollers and he starts telling all the citizens about what had happened. And he said there was some sort of werewolf type of creature that had attacked his friend and killed him. And he said, you know, if I wasn't fast enough, you know, didn't get away from him, I'd be dead too. And so the people of Burns, you know, are startled by this. They don't, you know, they don't want some creature to come into town and hurt their families, you know, their wives, their children. So the men of the town decide, you know, maybe we need to do something about this. Maybe we need to go check this out and see if what this man is saying is true. Because if, you know, there's some kind of creature out there that's killing people, obviously, you know, we need to do something about this. And so the men of the town go around spreading the word. They even go to the neighboring towns of White Bluff and Dixon, which at the time was known as Smeedsville for a little while. It eventually became known as Dixon. And so they go to these neighboring towns and they, you know, tell them about, you know, what has happened out just on the outskirts of Burns. And say, look, we got to protect our community. And so the men get together there in Burns and they, you know, grab their weapons. They bring guns, you know, pretty much anything that they can to protect themselves. They grab their weapons and they vow to hunt down this beast because, of course, they want to keep their families safe. And so this large group of people heads from the town of Burns out towards Hall Spring. And they've got a plan. They've decided that they want to lure this creature in and try to capture or kill the creature that way. So they bring a goat with them to use as, I guess, the bait to kind of lure the creature in. And so I guess the idea is once we attract, you know, the creature to come and try to eat this goat, then that's when we'll attack and we'll shoot and we'll kill this werewolf or whatever this creature is that's causing problems. And so the men strategically place the goat in a spot, and they hide behind trees, and they get ready to shoot. And they wait, and they wait, and they wait some more. And after some time passes, and it gets really, really dark, that's when the beast decides to approach the goat. And when he does, the men fire the weapons. And they all begin shooting right at the spot where they had left the goat and the spot that they wanted the werewolf or whatever this creature was to go. As soon as the werewolf gets there, they shoot and they shoot and they shoot. And when they get done shooting, they light their lanterns. They want to see what this monster looks like. But when they get the place lit up and bright enough where they can see, they didn't see a goat. They didn't see a werewolf. They didn't see anything. Somehow the beast had gotten away. And during the whole incident, while the men were shooting, guess what happened? Two more men were killed. And so their mission to kill the beast had backfired. Not only did they not kill the beast, the two more men from the town of Burns had been killed, but chaos. The men decided to go back to town. Not knowing what to do, they realized they had sort of been defeated and didn't want to lose any more of their men. They wanted to go back to town and regroup. So that's what they did. And after a little while, people, you know, didn't want to go back out and try to capture this creature anymore. They decided just to leave it alone. You know, days go by, weeks go by, eventually months go by. And for a while, nobody else had seen the creature or heard from the creature. And people just decided to sort of steer clear of that area. And it began to gain the name, instead of Hollow Springs, it began to be called Werewolf Springs. And so, determined to keep Dixon County safe, the citizens came up with a new plan to kill the werewolf. They were afraid it would come back, and they knew that it was probably better to be on offense instead of defense. And so, they wanted to be smarter about it this time. They didn't want to just take any and everybody out there to kill this beast. Instead, they decided they would get smart, and they would seek out the best big game hunter in the area that they could find. You know, there's always traditionally been great hunters in Tennessee, and I'm sure back then there were some great hunters in this area. And they went out and they found the best guy they could, the best big game hunter in this area. They found him, they paid him, and they gave him the task of killing the beast, which he accepted. And so he comes.
Well, now let me ask you a quick question. Do we know his name?
We don't know his name. Unfortunately, his name was not passed down. He was just known as the best, you know, hunter in the area is what I've always been told. You know, and I'm sure at the time he was probably well known to people, you know, the way that certain sportsmen are around here today. But no, unfortunately, I don't know his name. I wish that I did. And maybe that's something that we'll find out at some point, the more that we get this story out there and the more that people listen to it and they think back to their early memories. Maybe somebody will come forward with a name, because that is how I've been able to gather more of these details. You know, John, the more that we tell the story, sometimes the more that people remember and they bring back to you. But as of this time, I don't know his name. But my understanding is he was the best marksman in the area. And again, you know, this was around the Civil War time, so I don't know if it was somebody who had served in the Civil War. That would be something really interesting to figure out. You know, it's very, very possible with the timing of the story that it could have been somebody who was a marksman in the Civil War. You know, I've read about Confederate soldiers who could shoot from 100 yards away, Union soldiers as well, so who knows exactly who it was, but my understanding is they found the best guy and tried to bring him out here to Burns to try to, you know, get him to capture this beast, kill this beast. And so the hunter agrees to go out to Werewolf Springs, and he even gets a cabin, which some say is the old Hall cabin the Hall family used to live in. Doesn't exist anymore. Been told some different stories about this cabin, but my understanding is this cabin definitely existed, and everybody knows where it was, and so there's really no question about where the cabin was, and I guess that's probably why we've been able to kind of locate where this story happened. But anyways, the hunter was given access to the cabin, and he was, you know, given all the supplies that he needed. Whatever he needed to kill this beast, he was given. So he goes out to the cabin with his supplies and everything that he needs, and he, you know, sets up shop out there. Somebody leaves him alone, and this hunter decides, you know, he's going to take care of this himself. Maybe he needs to kind of be alone so he can kind of have the element of surprise on the beast. And for 2 days, this hunter, you know, based at the cabin, goes out into the woods and starts looking for this werewolf. And he uses all of his skills to try to hunt it down. He doesn't have any luck. But on the third night, he did find some success. So on the third night, the hunter finally found the werewolf, and it was actually found really close to the cabin. And he actually shot at the creature through a cabin window, but he missed. So he sees the creature. He's in the cabin, shoots at the creature. He's got the protection of the cabin that he's shooting from, shooting out the windows. So he does have some cover, some shelter, sort of helped him. He shoots at the werewolf, but he misses. Even though it appeared that he had hit the beast, it didn't seem that it had really done anything, because it seemed as if maybe the shot had only provoked the werewolf. Because after the werewolf appeared to be hit, it came back towards the cabin and started rushing at the cabin, like it was going to attack him. And then when he got closer to the cabin, he lunged at the cabin, broke through the cabin door, but at this point, the hunter was ready. He was ready. He was not dumb. He knew what he was. In a way, I think he was trying to lure the beast into the cabin. And when he did, he shot the beast several times. The bullets, though, didn't really seem to be phasing the creature, and he just kind of seemed to be continuing to come at this man. And so the man, you know, keeps shooting, and he's actually starting to run out of ammo. And there's this battle ensuing inside the cabin between this man and this werewolf-like creature. And as the man keeps shooting, he realizes he's about to run out of bullets. And he grabs a pistol that only has 2 shots left. And it appeared at this point as if the hunter probably wasn't going to make it. It looked like he was probably going to die, be killed by the werewolf. But luckily, right about the time that the werewolf is about to close in on him and kill him inside of this cabin, the hunter holds up his gun, ready to shoot his last bullet. Right as he does, the sun begins to come up outside of the cabin. The sun starts to come up. It startles the werewolf, and he decides to retreat from the cabin and go back into the woods. And so the hunter was able to survive. And it was really unclear if the shot had hurt the werewolf or not. So nobody knows if, you know, after being shot that many times, the werewolf went into the woods and died, or if it, you know, the shots didn't affect the werewolf. Nobody was actually sure. And nobody in the town of Burns really wanted to go looking for the werewolf anymore. I mean, obviously the men had gotten together. They'd gone out there and tried to take care of it themselves. That didn't work. They went around and found the best big game hunter they could find and tried to get him to go find the werewolf, kill the werewolf. He didn't succeed. He almost got killed as well. And so it looked like there was going to be, you know, no more hope. And so locals tend to kind of stay away from the area for a really long time. And then over the years, people would say, you know, different things about the werewolf. Some people would say they saw it. Other people would say, you know, it's just a story that's made up. It was several decades after, you know, this particular incident that the state of Tennessee decided during the Great Depression that it would be a good idea to go and find some land that wasn't really being used anymore for anything productive and turn it into state park, turn it into a state park. This particular area that became Montgomery Bell State Park was actually used. There was an iron furnace. And so what they would do is they would go around and find the iron within the ground, and they would get it out of the ground, and they would melt it down. And in order to melt it down, you have to go around and cut down all the trees. And so the area that is Montgomery Bell State Park today didn't look very good in the 1930s. It was a pretty rough area. And people had started to stay away from this area because, like I said, it was, you know, all the trees had been cut down to be used to create that iron, and it wasn't a very attractive part of the county. My understanding is there wasn't a lot of farming going on over here. People just kind of stayed clear of the area. And then it became, you know, Montgomery Bell State Park starting in 1935. It was officially deeded over to the state of Tennessee in 1943, and it directly after that becomes a state park. And so that area was never any further developed. That area became sort of remote. Nobody goes over, you know, really goes over there very much anymore. Montgomery Bell State Park is a 4,000-acre park, and it's huge. And I'm lucky. I love the park. I grew up hanging out there. So as I got older, I had to choose where I wanted to buy my home. I actually bought a house that is right on the border of the park, actually only a few football fields from Hall Springs, or if we, you know, as we refer to it now, as Werewolf Springs. And so it's been an area that I've gone over to and checked out several times. People still to this day say they hear weird things, see weird things. There are people in this area that will tell you that 20 or 30 years ago that they saw something out there. And like I said, it's a 4,000-acre park, and nobody really lives inside the park. There are a few of us that live on the outskirts of the park. But as far as those 4,000 acres, I mean, there could be animals or creatures that live in there that could kind of stay away from society, I guess you could say, and kind of do their own thing. And, you know, there's a few hikers that come through every now and again. It wouldn't probably be that hard to avoid them. So I've always wondered if there's something that still kind of hides in there. But that's basically the gist of the story as it's been passed down to me for, you know, like I said, several generations. It's made its way to me when I was a kid. And people in this area still talk about it all the time. And people will go and stay out at Montgomery Bell State Park just so they can take the hike over to Hall Springs, to Werewolf Springs, to see if they can, you know, find anything weird out there. People have been known to stay the night, bring their tents. It's located on a trail. It's I want to say 10 or 11 miles round trip on the trail if you were to do the whole loop. But it's just an interesting place, and it's an interesting story. And so that's basically what I've got. What questions do you guys have, or what comments do you have after I sort of have told the audience what I know as somebody local who has grown up right down the road from where this happened? I've tried to tell the story to my best ability, but now I kind of wonder from y'all's point of view, what have you heard? What do you think is interesting? What questions or comments might you have?
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to turn it over to Elijah, because all I've done is I've read a couple of versions of a story about Werewolf Springs, but Elijah, the floor is yours.
Well, I still occasionally hear things that have happened in Werewolf Springs. I got an email from a gentleman, and it's quite a ways back, I think. He mentioned something that a family member of his, I think it was his stepson, was driving around Montgomery Bell, and he said one of the fields by the entrance of Montgomery Bell, it'd have to be on the backside, surely. He said that he'd seen a bipedal wolfman-looking thing. I think he described it looking almost like a Doberman. I'm a little fuzzy on the details. It's been a little while, but that was an email I gotten. I had a gentleman. Ooh, goodness. I think a gentleman comment on one of my videos that something chased them out of Werewolf Springs and either held on to the back of their car real bad. When they got back to their house, they seen their car and it was scratched up. And I've even had an experience down there with my family. Have I talked about that on this show, on last week's show, John? What happened to us down in Werewolf Springs?
Well, even if you did, I'd like for you to go ahead and include it, because tonight is the Werewolf Springs discussion.
And I don't think I know the story, so I'd love to hear it myself.
Yeah, sure, sounds good. Well, me and my family, we've been going to Montgomery Bell since I was a little boy, and it's about 2002, 2003, something like that. I was around 5 or 6 years old. We were camping down there, and the park invited everybody to come and watch a showing of their documentary, The Legend of Werewolf Springs. And I want to stop briefly there. John, I sent it to you. They have a documentary, a more recent one, called Montgomery Bell Shelter for the Soul. And while it's not about Werewolf Springs, they have a small segment on there, about 30 seconds, where they talk about it. And they show actually a clip of the werewolf hand grabbing the back of that wagon included in that. It's very brief, but it's one of the things I remember most from that little documentary, and thank goodness they included it. But anyway, you know, we were watching that documentary and learning about the backside history of the park over at Hall Springs, like what Mr. Justin said. And my dad, he'd been doing construction over in Dixon. He was building that school that's a little ways down the road from the park. I forget the exact name of it. But while he was doing construction there, people would talk about that something to the effect that at midnight or on a full moon, you could see a werewolf crossing across the cemetery over there. And, you know, my dad, he loved werewolves. He, growing up as a little boy, he obsessed over monsters and werewolves. He used to watch the old Wolfman movie. Just has loads and loads of werewolf books. He loved them. And, you know, after he seen this documentary, we decided after a little while we were going to go to Werewolf Springs. You know, at the time we didn't know anything about dogmen, but we thought maybe it was a misidentified Bigfoot. And a few months after we were staying and seeing the documentary, we found where Hall Springs was, so we made a day trip out there. It was me, my sister, my mom and dad, my cousin, and my grandmother. And, you know, we hiked in. And Werewolf Springs, how it's situated, is there's an iron gate at the entrance, and it's one trail that goes way down, and it'll eventually split into two. You go left, and it'll take you to a lean-to in the woods. You go straight, and it just keeps going on, and eventually if you take the right turns, there's a cemetery up in there somewhere. But anyway, we were walking along the main path, and my dad noticed that some of the grass on the left-hand side of the path had been pushed down like someone big had been walking through it. So we jumped off the trail and went that direction, went a little further, and we found a branch about shoulder height that was twisted off, not broken off. Twisting off branches is a Bigfoot habit, and we noticed that up there. But we go a little bit further, and my dad found an anomaly. It was like a half circle of turkey feathers is on the ground. It had a look like something had a dead turkey there, and it had been squatting there just kind of plucking out the feathers and setting it down around itself right before it ate, I guess. And I don't know if I have pictures of that anywhere, but I'll have to look into that sometime. But
yeah, do that.
The real impressive thing was we went a little further, and after a few minutes, the ladies in our group, they had to answer the call of nature. You know, they stepped off into the bush and took care of their business. And the wind started picking up, and it started getting just a little bit more of a stormy weather around. It didn't actually start storming, but it started getting that a little bit more darker clouds and whatnot. And the train that runs alongside the back of the park, that railroad, the train came through blowing its whistle. And right when it started blowing its whistle, something started howling back at us, sounded like an 800-pound wolf. And it was so loud, it vibrated in your chest. You can feel it rumble in your chest. And it was just absolutely terrifying, you know. Me, I was just a little boy. I'd never heard anything like that. It was just absolutely frightening. And we got out of the woods, got back onto the main trail. And when we come in, there's two ladies that had a baby strapped to their chest, one of those little baby carriers. And they'd been jogging in, but by the time we were coming out, those women are running out, and that baby's head was, it looked like a bobblehead. It was just bouncing all over the place. It looked like they were endangering the baby just by how fast they were running. And that's essentially what happened down there. Now, I do want to take it in a little bit of a humorous turn, because there had also been a group of Boy Scouts that my dad had seen going into the park. And he said, well, with that thing howling, I need to go warn these people, you know, let them know there's some kind of a big animal around here. So he separated from us and walked down the path toward that lean-to, and he went and found this Boy Scout troop, went up to the troop leader and said, man, did you hear that? No, this is a deaf Boy Scout group. So it was something like almost like from a movie. He had come upon a deaf Boy Scout group. They didn't hear a thing, unfortunately. But that got us into Bigfoot research after that. But my dad would always like going back and forth to Werewolf Springs because we did have that experience. And I was absolutely terrified to go back there. He'd be the only person I'd go back with, and he could barely get me to go. He would often go with a gentleman named Jose Agostini and do a lot of research there. And Actually, one night they were down there researching in the night, and they started hearing all these big roars and whatnot, and they didn't know what it was. There's all these roars, and come to find out, there's an old drive-in close by, and this was when they were screening that first The Hulk movie, and they were hearing the roars echoing across the woods, and they I guess it confused them or what, but apparently they're hearing the roars from The Hulk, and it was a yeah.
Okay, well, gotcha.
I'm sure that was a rather sobering moment.
But anyway, that's really interesting. So we've got basically a couple of stories now. Let me ask you this, Elijah. If you had a map of the area, could you kind of draw the trail where it splits and where you and your family heard those horrible sounds?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's not even right at where the trail splits. I wouldn't even say it's – I'd almost have to point it out. It's probably about maybe a little less than half to the point where the trail splits into a fork, and then we jumped off toward the left, went off over into the bushes and whatnot, and went a little ways over there. I seem to recall it's very green and grown up at the time, and I have a very vivid memory of my cousin running out of those bushes. I think where she had been, answering the call of nature, so to speak. I remember her running out of those bushes, pretty scared.
Gotcha.
Now,
well,
the unfortunate thing about the area. Pardon?
What? I was going to say, first of all, if you don't mind trying to find a map and kind of diagram some of that, that would be great, and just send me an email. I think people would be interested to know kind of, the area where you're talking about.
Justin will have to verify this for me, but I think the pull-in spot, it's Hall Cemetery Road. Isn't that right, Justin?
Yes, you got Hall Cemetery Road. There's a Hall Cemetery there, and then it's not too far from there. Now, you're not supposed to really access it that way, because I guess there's nowhere really for you to park to access it from there. But, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Now, I do want people to know, if you do go down to Werewolf Springs and you can take that Hall Cemetery Road entrance, don't park in front of the gate because the ranger will come and have your vehicle towed away. If you got to park over there, park in the cemetery. I guess it's a public cemetery, but you're not as likely to get towed away in there.
Okay, well, when I come up there, you're going to have to take me there and let me see all this. This is going to be exciting. So
come on up, buddy.
Well, I'm planning on it, and in fact, we're going to be announcing tomorrow the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference is going to be up in Paris, Tennessee, at the Paris Convention Center on October the 1st, and then October the 2nd, we're going to do part of it on Facebook as a Facebook Live or perhaps Zoom. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be announcing that this weekend. It'll be on the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference website, and tickets will be available. It's just going to be a blast. It's going to be a lot of fun. Both of you gentlemen are going to be there talking. Justin will probably be talking both days. We're going to ask him to talk both days, and I know that Elijah might be there on Saturday, but is definitely going to be talking and doing some co-hosting with me on Saturday. So we're going to have a lot of fun there at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference. Now, it's just going to be a blast, and we always have fun at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, regardless. It's been a lot of fun. It was at the it was over in Kingsport, Tennessee, at Bays Mountain Park, but they elected that they didn't want to have it there anymore. So we might have a new home over there at the Paris, Tennessee Convention Center. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes and see if they like us and see if we like them. So I think it'll be a lot of fun. So what else? All right, Jason, Justin, what else goes on over there near Hall Springs and Werewolf Springs that is a little bit paranormal and we need to know about?
Well, you know, the there's also, I can tell you another quick little story about Montgomery Buffalo State Park because we've got just a few minutes. Now, there was, in addition to the train crash that I've already told you about, which contained the circus, there was also another crash that actually happened during the Civil War. If we kind of go back to the Civil War days, got to kind of give you a little bit of American history here, so I apologize for those who are listening who don't know. I am a history teacher, high school history teacher, so I just kind of have these facts off the top of my brain, so just bear with me for a second. But we go back to the Civil War, 1865. During that time, Dixon County, Tennessee, was a contested area, okay? Tennessee has seceded and joined the Confederacy. The Union, the North, had invaded Tennessee trying to, you know, convince the South to rejoin the Union. And so while we didn't have any major battles here in Dixon County, there was a lot of contention that took place. There was a lot of battles between occupying Union armies and what we would call Confederate guerrillas. So in other words, maybe men who were not necessarily technically in the Confederate Army, but they sided with the Confederacy, maybe their brothers, uncles, whoever, father was in the Confederate Army, so they were trying to show their support by attacking, you know, Union soldiers and Union camps and things like that. And Burns itself, before it became Burns Station after the Civil War, was actually the site of an old prison camp where Union Army would go around and find Confederate guerrillas, and, you know, they'd round them up. They'd have to do something with them, right? They'd have to put them in jail. Well, they didn't have any jails, so they made one right here, what would become Burns. And so there were a lot of Confederates who were a little bit upset that there, these guys were being held captive, and they wanted to go, and they wanted to, you know, they wanted to free them. And so they came down, they started causing some problems on the railroad, and they wanted to mess up some trains that were taking supplies from this area into Nashville. And so they pulled a couple of the railroad spikes, messed up a couple of the tracks, and they caused a, you know, they caused a bad crash here. And right at that area where they caused that crash, known as McNary's Cut, because that's where the guy who was in charge of the Confederate guerrillas, a guy named McNary, and they caused some destruction, caused a little battle there. Some people had died. And I've heard from a guy who grew up in Burns in the 1960s. He's an older gentleman now. He's a good friend of mine. And he said that when he was growing up and in the Boy Scouts and doing things like that, camping over at the park, that right near the fire, where the fire tower is today, right on the, in the south side of the park, right next to where the railroad tracks kind of go right through the south end of the park there. And I'll be glad to show you this spot someday, guys, when y'all come down. But that's where, you know, some of these Boy Scouts said that they saw some crazy things. They said that they saw some ghosts and some other, you know, things when they were camping out there. And this fella actually took me out there probably about, it was probably about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, not long, okay, just relatively recent history. He took me through the town of Burns, told me all about everything he knew about the town, and he wanted to show me where this, you know, supposedly these ghosts were when he was a young man. And so he showed me, and he told me the story about the Civil War. And he said, you know, we always just assumed it was ghosts of people who had died, you know, fighting there. And, you know, they were kind of, you know, haunting the ground. And so so there's another little extra story for you, because I am a, what I would call an expert on Montgomery Bell State Park. I've written some really cool stories about the history of the park. But that's also some things that I've tried to write down and include was, you know, that Civil War attack, and then, you know, them boys in the 1960s saying that they saw some crazy stuff, and they swear by it even to this day. He says he saw something there. You know, I don't know if I have the guts to go out there and spend the night by the fire tower and see if I see any old, you know, Confederate or Union Army soldiers' ghosts. I don't know if I have the guts to stay over at Hall's Spring, you know, and see if I can find the werewolf. But, you know, there are legends here at Montgomery Bell State Park. And like I mentioned at the beginning of the program, Montgomery Bell State Park is one of the finest parks in the state of Tennessee. It has an excellent inn and conference center that is wonderful. So if you want to come down and try to see if these things are real, you know, I'm glad to show you around a little bit because I live on that park. There's definitely some cool stuff, some cool stories that we've got here at our local park that we are proud to tell. And, you know, welcome people to come down here and check it out and see what you can find.
Okay, well, we want to find some things, but we don't want to find too much. Do you agree, Elijah?
Oh, I want to find plenty.
Yeah, I just want to be a little bit careful what I find. I mean, listen, I want to come back. What?
Hey, as long as we come back safe and see something, man, that's a good time.
Well, now that is true, and I wouldn't mind seeing some of those ghosts. So those are at the fire. Those we'll call those the fire tower ghosts. Is that right, Dustin?
That's what I guess we could refer to them as. Yeah, that's an interesting story that I was told, and you know, I like to listen to the old timers and what they have to say, and you know, that story was cool to me because it was rooted in some stuff that actually happened in history. And when I went back and looked up that stuff, you know, of course he was telling the truth. I mean, you know, they knew back in the 1960s about the battles and the things that had happened 100 years before that, and so they were aware of what was going on. And while people today may have forgotten about it, you know, they still remember, and they want people like me to know about it, and they want to make sure that information gets passed down because, you know, he truly believes that there was something weird about that spot, and I believe, you know, what he believes, so.
Okay, well, that's wonderful. That's a great story. And now, Elijah, do you have another story that we might could wrap up with?
Well, I was actually hoping to ask Justin, do you happen to know where that old cabin was where the gentleman was hunting the beast throughout the night, or is that just kind of a lost area now?
No, my understanding is it was right over by the spring, and there was an old cabin that stood there, and When the conservation group, I guess it was the CCC, the WPA, whoever it was that came in here and sort of took control of the land and turned it into a park before they deeded it over to the state of Tennessee, would use any structures that were already here. I mean, they're not going to go in and just tear stuff down, right? So my understanding is that at that point in the 1930s, when they started to build the park, that there was an old cabin that was still standing out there. Now, the way that they did this is they went in and purchased the land from the people that owned it. So they didn't just take it. It wasn't just sitting there and nobody owned it. There were actually families who owned the land. They would have to come in and they would have to pay them money, you know, and relocate them. And in some circumstances, the way I understand it is they would relocate them a little further west where there was some better farming land, and they would, you know, pay them for this land and then give them the opportunity to buy some other land out there that they had purchased or whatever. I haven't done super deep research into that, but that's my understanding. So the way I understand it is the Hall family was sort of moved out and kind of pushed off the land. Now, they were given money for it, but they were moved off. And when they did, you know, they left the cabin there. And so for years that cabin stood, and it was a shelter for anybody who would hike. And if you'd get stuck out there or you wanted to camp out there, you could stay in that cabin for years. My understanding is that eventually, because it was so old and it wasn't built by the Parks Administration, that it sort of crumbled and sort of was lost to nature. But they put up a something in its place because it was well-placed, my understanding is, on this trail that goes about 10 or 11 miles. This spot is sort of, you know, right there around the loop. So it was a good place to have a shelter. So my understanding is they built another, like, replica of it, I guess you would almost say, maybe not trying to look exactly like it, but another structure sort of in the same area. And it stood for years and years. And then I'm not sure if it's still there today or not. I haven't been down there in a few years, honestly, because it is such a hard walk. I haven't been down there in a while to see if the structure's still there. Somebody told me recently that it was torn down. Somebody said that they might have rehabbed it a little bit. I don't know for sure. That would be something that would be fun to go back and see, because it's been a few years. But I know for a fact there was a structure there when I was younger, when I used to frequent the park as a kid. There was a structure out there that people would stay in. But like I said, it's my understanding that that was not the original cabin. But the reason I say all this is to tell you that is that right around where the spring is, where this old structure was and the remains of it, my understanding, the remains of it are still there. So we can sort of locate from all those clues that it was probably in that location around the spring where the old shelter was So that, you know, it's good that we still can kind of find that area, and you know, that might be fun to kind of go out there and maybe take some tents and stay the night. We talked about it. I talked about it last year when I wrote the story and put it in the Dixon Post. We talked about me and a group of guys that read the story, you know, wanted to go out there and spend the night and try to brave it. I don't know why we never did it, but we haven't done it yet. Maybe if you fellas are interested, I don't know. It could be a lot of fun. You know, could be scary. I don't know. it could be a lot of fun, and you know, I do live pretty close by, so we've got the advantage of that. But yeah, it'd be fun to take some tents out there, and maybe in the fall when the weather kind of cools down a little bit, whoever's interested, you know, it may be maybe a good idea.
Absolutely.
We will see what we see. Yeah, I'd love to get a map of the park and kind of outline some of that for folks so they would have an idea. I don't think the park will be overrun with tourists, but it would just be nice for people to have a general idea where Hall Springs is and where the trail is and where the old cabin was. I just think, you know, it might be a nice thing to have. So that's great.
John,
now, yes, sir?
I was going to say, while you're on the topic real quick, I hate to interrupt, but I did last year sort of produce a map based on the park. If you go over to the inn, does have a map right when you walk in, and they give them out to anybody who comes in, has a nice map. And on there, it doesn't actually have Hall Spring located, but what I did was I took that map, compared it to Google Maps, which does sort of point out Hall Spring, and I created a map that I don't mind maybe scanning or taking a picture of and sending it to you. I have a pretty good idea of where it is. Like I said, it's not very detailed. It's not down, you know, real close. But from sort of a bird's eye view over the park, I have pretty much narrowed it down to where I think, you know, the general area of it is and sort of the best way to get there. So I'd be glad to share that with you or, you know, with anybody else who would like to take on the challenge of trying to, you know, piece this mystery together. I'd be glad to share that with whoever, but I wanted to let you know that we did try to produce
that. I think that would be great. So if you could maybe get that to me this weekend, I'd appreciate it. I'd love to take a look at that.
Absolutely. Sure thing.
All right, great. All right, well now we will go in order of Elijah first and then Justin. Elijah, what's your last word for tonight?
Well, firstly, I'd like to thank you for having me on, and secondly, for Justin telling all that really good information about the area. You know, I've grown up going there, so despite the fear that it gave me as a child, I really love the area. I'm very nostalgic for it, and I'd honestly like to go back there again very soon. There's always room to research there. I don't know how active it is in the main portion of Werewolf Springs anymore, because I understand that there has been a lot of construction in the past, 15 to 20 years, and whereas it was just big open fields with nothing there, it's a lot of houses there now, and we haven't had a whole lot of activity in that amount of time. We've found Bigfoot footprints there and what we believe to be a Dogman footprint there, and we even camped there one night without much activity. Now, for those interested in Bigfoot research, the main portion of Montgomery Bell, there are Bigfoot creatures in there. My dad and another researcher by the name of Nathan Davis, they actually seen three of them in the park in 2009 and recorded their encounter. And it is real interesting encounter. They were, I'll tell it in more detail at some point, but they were up around that stone church, around that pavilion, and they started having activity, and they walked out and went across that stone bridge and was sitting on one of those little wooden fences, and they're just listening, and they turned their flashlight on, and through the mist and the fog, because it was kind of a misty night, it was misting on them a little bit, there's a little bit of a fog, they could see two shapes stand on top of that bridge. It looked like two Chewbaccas walking around on the bridge, and there was one underneath the bridge poking its head out back and forth, dodging in and out from beneath the bridge, staring at them. But like I said, I'll go into that into more detail at some point, but there is still stuff that goes on down there, in at least in the main portion of the park. I know me and my sister went down there. It was actually around Christmas time and heard a fairly weird call down there up around that stone church. So I think there's at least stuff that comes in the main portion of the park, but I couldn't speak with any degree of certainty on the Werewolf Springs from my personal experience.
Okay, well, look, that's great. Those are some great observations and a little bit of information about the Bigfoot activity up there at Montgomery Bell State Park. And, Justin, the final last word is yours.
Well, again, thank you guys for having me on. I love telling these stories about Dixon County, these legends and these interesting things that have been passed down from generation to generation. I just appreciate, you know, you guys giving me the platform to come on and tell you to, you know, and I want to just reiterate again that these are not things that I've made up. I mean, these are not things that, you know, I just, you know, sat in my backyard and just dreamed up one night, you know, thinking, oh, how can I scare everybody? How can I make up the, you know, the scariest, best, you know, crazy story about Dixon County? It's not that. It's that's not, you know, what the goal is here. You know, these are things that I heard growing up, and these are things that I heard not just from one person or two people, but, you know, they've been legends in this area that have been passed down for a long time. And like Elijah mentioned, there's DVDs that I've got that same DVD. I've got it right here in my hand right now. It's where, you know, they decided to include that story, you know. And it's not something that they made up. It's something that's been around here for a long time that predates the park, you know, by decades. And so, you know, it's been a lot of fun to be able to tell the story and share it with people from all around Tennessee and all around the country. And, you know, I'd love to meet some people, you know, who want to come down to the park and maybe explore a little bit and maybe see what they can find out. Because I'll be honest with you, even though it is something that we know about here in Dixon County, it's something that'll, you know, I would say most people, if you mentioned Werewolf Springs, they at least connect it to Montgomery Bell and tell you a little bit about it. But it's not something that people are really focused on at this point in time. I think it's something that sort of got lost in history over the years. And I think that, you know, me writing the story last Halloween, just, you know, the newspaper was asking me for a scary story. And I said, you know, I know this old legend from when I was growing up. Let me talk to a few people about it. And we were able to piece something together. But it was really just a lot of fun to you know, see how far it's gone. And here we are, you know, talking on a podcast about it. And, you know, hopefully soon people will, you know, come out here and check these things out. But like I said, it's not something that people around here really stay focused on. So I don't know how many times, you know, the actual Hall Spring gets visited either, because it is, you know, on a long loop of a trail that goes for miles. And, you know, while there are some serious hikers that probably do take that trail, I wouldn't say that it's a trail that's traveled down every single day. It's a 4,000-acre park. And I think there's a lot of mystery to it. I think there's a lot of things out there that you know, can still be discovered. And it's not something that's kind of already been, you know, written about or studied too much. You know, like some things are kind of beaten to death or almost over-documented. This is something that really has kind of been under-documented. And I think for those listening around who are looking for something that maybe they can, you know, be one of the first to really figure out, I'd say, you know, Werewolf Springs is still something that's kind of primitive. I mean, it's just something that, you know, while it is locally famous around here, there's still a lot of people that don't really know about it. And we're needing some people to maybe go out there and kind of figure out and piece together the last few pieces of the puzzle to really tell this story. So thanks again for letting me come on and talk about it. It's been a great joy, and I really enjoyed it, and I can't wait to do even more cool things with you guys.
Well, that's great, because now next week, part one of a two-part series on Vampire Hotel. All right, Elijah, you going to be with us?
I reckon so, brother, if I don't got anything going on, but I'll let you know in plenty of time.
Sounds good. And how about you, Justin? Will you be with us for parts one and two Vampire Hotel?
John, I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait. This has been a lot of fun. And, you know, these cool stories are a blast to be a part of, to tell. So, yeah, I'll definitely be back, and I look forward to learning more about the Vampire Hotel with you, you know, in the future here.
Right, that sounds good. I got a lot of interesting things to tell about what happened and what happened as a result of the Vampire Hotel. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So anyway, guys, thanks a lot for being with us on the official, I guess we're about as official as it comes, the official LBL podcast. I mean, that sounds good, and somebody will have to tell us we're not. But I think we've got some great stories, and looking forward to having a lot of fun with you guys on this podcast in the weeks to come. So, look, thanks a lot. We'll see you next time. I'll do the quick call around with our co-hosts, and we'll chat just a moment. And so, look, thanks a lot, and we'll see you soon next week, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central Time, right there on ScaryCast. Have a good one.
Have a great night, gentlemen.
Everybody say goodbye.
Thank you, guys.
See you.
All
take
right.
Care, guys.
You have a good one. Yeah, bye-bye.